Hello and welcome back to Season 2 of Ultimate Voices Europe, the EUF's not-so-new-anymore diversity podcast. Ultimate Voices Europe was launched in April 2025 by me, Jakob Dunzian, and my friend Annika Lünsmann, with the goal of giving space to the stories and experiences in our sport that don't always get the spotlight. I'm Jakob Dunzian, or Dunzi, my pronouns are they, them. You might know me from playing with Mosquitos, reigning European champion in the mixed division. And I'm also working in gender equity in sports. So yeah, doing something that is closely related to this podcast in both my free time and my paid time. And very excited to be starting the second season of UVE with Annika.
Hello, my name is Annika Lünsmann. My pronouns are she, her. I play for Zurich Ultimate Splash now. We added the Splash for this season because we made a splash at Windmill last year. And I also work in gender equity, not as closely in sports anymore. Just I work for the gender equity office of the city of Zurich. And so I also work on like diversity topics in my pay time and in my free time, also on the EUF's DEI committee, and I'm the chair of this committee. So within the DEI committee, we are doing this podcast. We also have a few other projects. We are a committee just like the athletes committee or the spirit committee by the EUF, and our projects include right now still also safeguarding. We were responsible for the trans inclusion policy and in the past also diversity showcase games. Over the past first season of the UVE podcast, we spoke to different individuals from the European Ultimate community.
We've had conversations about visibility, queerness, gender, racism, and many other interesting topics. So if you haven't listened to the UVE season one yet, go check it out. And that, of course, also brings us to season two, because we're going to have a slightly different focus.
While last year, the aim of this podcast was to give a voice to people with different backgrounds and perspectives, this year, we're sticking to one main topic that every episode will focus on, and that's women's ultimate. Jakob and I decided on this new focus last year in November in Vienna, when the EUF presented some numbers to us, which show quite a shocking decline in the number of women's teams in Europe.
Yeah, so we were at the EUF board meeting, indeed, where these numbers were discussed. And to kind of tackle that, the EUF decided to start a new initiative, Project 44. And we thought there's one person that we know that can talk about this project with us and all the details and complexities around it. What does it mean? Why even the name Project 44? So we're super excited for the first episode of this podcast to have our guest, Felix Nemo Nemetz. Hey.
Hello, hello.
Nemo, for those who don't know you, in what role are you joining us today?
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm the General Secretary of the EUF. So my role from event management transformed into more. And now I'm trying to organize all projects, all kinds of projects for the EUF that are happening at the same time. And yeah, I would say that's the role.
Mm-hmm. So could you explain to us what does Project 44 stand for?
Project 44 for me is a very conscious decision to have this narrative, women's ultimate or women to play ultimate, to have this as a pushed into the foreground. What I mean by that is you have, when you're talking about different aspects that need change, you often hear that this idea, this ideology needs to really trickle down into all different aspects of the federation, of an organization, so that this change really can happen. And for me, Project 44 is exactly that, that it's spoken out, that all committees, the board, everyone participating in the EUF should have women's ultimate as a priority and bring it to the table in all discussions that are held.
So Project 44 is kind of a project that puts women's ultimate into focus on like all levels of European ultimate and all the structures, right? Do you want to explain to us why 44?
Yeah, we tried to find something that is very on point and something that we can measure in a sense as well. So we last year in 2025, we had 22 women's teams that were eligible to participate in the EOCF at the end of the season. We had a total of 30 participants in the club season, but only 22 made it to 10 games, made it so that they are competing for the finals. Yeah. And in order to change that, we said 44, so it's double the amount. And that's a very edgy, in your face kind of, this is what we want to achieve as EUF. But the reach EUF has on this is also limited. That's something that we are very conscious about.
All right. I mean, of course, that's a very strong and clear goal, like you said. I'm just wondering, since you said your agency here is limited as EUF, but of course you do have some agency, right? Otherwise, this goal wouldn't exist. So what is something that EUF is doing or is starting to do now to achieve this goal?
I think it's it begins really to with being this multiplier, being this federation, this somewhat authority in this sport that puts it in front of everyone and starts the conversation and continues the conversation and brings this topic into all kinds of conversations of ultimate in Europe. So this is a first step. I think we are also at the stage where we don't have a total solution for this. I think no one really has. So we are conscious in that sense as well. But we want to be the pushing force in communication and thinking about it and continue to talk about it.
Nice, nice. I think that's definitely a really good approach. I'm wondering, like actually, I'm not wondering, but I guess maybe not all of our listeners know like the numbers that we were talking about before. You said there's 22 teams that were eligible for EUCF last year, or like that could have made EUCF. Maybe for someone, that's actually not a bad number. Maybe we can put it in context a little, just kind of like, I know there was way more men's teams and also mixed teams. Maybe we can also give some context on how many women's teams were there before, just so that like our listeners kind of get why this number 22 is actually quite a bad number. And we really don't have a lot of women's teams anymore, basically.
Yeah, I think it's important to, when we're putting it into context, it's the context of higher level European ultimate. Mm-hmm. Right? So we already know that there are many different and many other teams all over Europe. Sometimes they have the challenge that the national championships are just in a timing for them that where they don't have to focus on European season. But more specifically for elite level ultimate in Europe, we had 2024 when really this new kind of season started. We started with 32 teams. 2025, we went down to 30. 2026, we are now at 29 teams that register for the club season. In comparison, in the open division, we went from 56 to 64 and now we're at 52 again. So I think we always see some fluctuation in teams. That's very natural.
But that's still more than double. So
yeah, exactly. And also in the mixed division, we currently have 44 teams in 2026. And when we look at the, we not only compare it to this system that we are currently working with, but also the EUCR system that we had before COVID. And mixed and open are back at the same level that we had back then, but women's is lower and declining. And this is the trend that we want to change.
Well, I think you already mentioned, like, there's probably a lot of different factors and contexts for that. Of course, COVID did play a role in this whole story. Also probably differs in terms of what scene we're looking at, right? Probably in the UK, there's different factors that affect whether women's teams can go and participate than in Germany, for example. I do wonder, are there any general trends to observe in terms of women's players going to play mixed, and thereby there's more mixed teams now than there used to be? I know also what's often talked about is that, like, elite players go join elite teams as well, especially since we're in a year with a World Club Championship that is even more prevalent. Do you see these things affecting the number of teams registering?
I think it's difficult for me to put my finger at specific elements. For example, last year when we had, I think, the second full club season, we saw a spike in numbers of teams in general, which allowed for, which also pulled other teams into the system that just wanted to get an experience of an international tournament, get a tournament close by where we are basically bringing other teams from other countries that where they simply don't have a chance, for example, to be selected for a windmill or something like that. So this interest in, okay, there is an international tournament that I can participate in. At the same time, with this year's Club Worlds, I think we also see again that we have less teams that are experimenting, but overall maybe more teams that are committing for the full season or committing to these tournaments in order to get an or a better preparation for Limerick. Then the overall topic with athletes, high level athletes going to elite clubs in order to get their medals, get their trophies, I think even though it might be commented more publicly on other divisions, the women's division, I think, is for me the melting pot where you see it the most and where you have the most fluctuation, the most teams where sometimes you look at these teams and are wondering, is it a team of that region or is it a team that is combined together? I think this is not a judgment comment about it. I think this is very much fair with the amount of women's athletes that we have in Europe. But again, this is what we want to change.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think it's a really hard position to be in as, like, an elite women's player that I imagine that doesn't have a team that they could play on a level that they would like to play in and that they also deserve to play in. So I really understand the, like, switching to playing with other, like, with elite teams, but I also see how much that hurts women's ultimate in the grassroots level, or, like, in the, like, non-elite level, but maybe, like, mid-tier level. And that's a really, really tough situation that, like, I guess it's really hard also with, like, the rostering systems of the UF. Like, it's always been, like, fluctuation at some point. Maybe that's been stopped a little, so you have to commit to one team early. Again, not necessarily, like, judgmental, but again, that maybe also, like, hinders players to then stay with their teams until UCF and then play UCF with a high-level team. Which, like, there's, I guess, pros and cons for both, because it also makes sense to actually be with a team for a whole season and then, like, actually have a team win and not a team get 5 elite extras for UCF. But I guess within the women's division, this is like the division that is affected most by these situations.
Yeah, I feel like what you're pointing towards is a struggle that we've also encountered in past episodes, which is, mm-hmm. in my opinion, it's a bit of a decision of what you prioritize between fairness and inclusion.
Yeah.
And more strict rostering regulations in this sense of like, at what point do you have to commit to what team? That's a matter of fairness, right? Because mm-hmm. we wouldn't want a team qualifying for UCF that has some star players that are not going to play there, or a team pulling up with 5 stars that weren't part of the team the whole year. Mm-hmm. That's a question of fairness. And if we want to, like, as UF is doing now, sort of prioritizing that a little bit more to like put a more a structure around that, inclusion sometimes suffers a bit in the sense of there's less freedom of movement, etc. And I think that's something that we encounter in a lot of issues. Also, I think it's of course very prevalent in the whole transgender debate of like fairness and inclusion. And without the making any going into that now, because I think that's a big box we talked about a lot about last mm-hmm. year already.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it kind of shows that there's similarities in like the barriers that are there for people to be able to do a sport and take part. And it's often very similar questions that we have to ask ourselves, regardless of if it's around this group or that group or any other group that sort of has structural barriers, which I think is also why, of course, like, I think it's interesting to note. And I also brought up that question of like the individual people switching teams, etc.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, Annika, I think it's super fair for every person to want to play on the level that they belong at. And so what's probably more relevant is just asking what kind of structural changes can we make to allow that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially on this note of how many restrictions or on these roster rules, how do we put them in place? We specifically looked with this mindset also in the preparation of the season 2026. And there was a big discussion in the competition committee about should we introduce more flexibility for the women's division?
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, we decided against it because it would then also likely have the same effect that, similar to what Jakob just said, this rule of, okay, when can I switch? How do I optimize this switching? How much of mm-hmm. this is actually contributing to the development of my team? And ultimately, do I anyways switch to another team later in the season where then it gets even more blurry for this team history and how this is contributed. I think one important aspect to this is the national federations, which sometimes do not have very strict or rules at all in place where and who and how someone can play with a certain team. And I think here is a very good opportunity for national federations to also focus on the development of their women's division in their country in order to then make a strong case for why an athlete is not possible to go overseas, I mean, over the border. So I think there is an element to the sports development overall that we can still improve as Europe, because I think, yeah, based on the geographical situation and the political situation, that jumping over borders is so easy and everyone can just travel.
Yeah.
The role of the national federations becomes more important, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that. There is like lots of really different policies there. I even noticed it, like playing in Ireland and playing in Switzerland. Like, I moved to Ireland and a week later I was allowed to play Irish championships. And in Switzerland, like that, like I played on the second team because I had just joined and stuff. But I think like in Switzerland, that wouldn't ever have been possible. Now there's a change again with like new like some new rules of like which teams can participate, but still with people that have only been here for a week, you would not really be able to play. And then again, like that's a question of like that team in Ireland was like, it was really good that I was able to play because there were so few women, right? So it was good that I was able to play. And then like, again, that allows more travel players and stuff, which can also be detrimental. So it's always, like Jakob said, again, like a, I don't know, weighing out different aspects. I'm wondering, so we are really focusing on like elite teams and the elite structures in EUF and the EUCF eligible teams, I guess. I think when we want to build on the women's division and like we want to like increase the number of FMPs playing this sport and especially women's teams, right? We're not focusing on mixed teams, we're actually focusing on women's teams. We also really have to look at grassroots levels and junior levels. And yeah, I'm wondering, is, do you already have like a few ideas there, or is that something you're going to work out with for us, the DEI committee, the athletes committee, and so on?
I think it's we are mostly lacking currently in the youth committee. So here I'm quickly putting in a quick advertisement. We have the youth championships in Vienna, first week of August, and then right after the finals, we are starting the youth conference. And this youth conference should really create again a networking event and a communication and kind of overbridging event between the people that are actively working with all these young athletes to the national federations and also to the EUF as a federation, international federation, to what do we need to do in order to have a sustainable structure throughout these stages of an athlete, an environment, an organization, to create something that that drives people, drives young athletes into the sport. And once again here, this is obviously a youth conference, but we want to bring the focus on women's ultimate in there heavily. So there are elements that we want to build on from what we've learned with EUGEM, the European Ultimate Gender Equity Manual. I don't know if you saw that. So a couple of years ago, there was a blog in the German speaking area, Uplift Ultimate. They have been hacked and the content wasn't available, but now it's back. And so in there, there's also very important anecdotes and experiences from leaders, female matching leaders in the ultimate, the European ultimate community. And I think also, all these different elements should then be condensed into how can we make youth ultimate, grassroots ultimate better, because only with a strong base, we can also expect the top to grow. So that's also very, very, very conscious about that.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. That's also in line with what I wanted to ask next is, because of course, if we just look at the top, and now I don't mean the number of teams, but the actual sort of performances that we see, especially internationally, and the level of players, I think there's a strong case to be made that women's ultimate in Europe is actually booming.
For sure.
Because there's teams like Shout, for example, last year went to US Open and actually was able to compete with a lot of US teams. There's more and more female matching players that go play in the US and take important roles in women's teams there. So I think from that point, like also if we look at last world cycle, right, I think we saw mixed teams and open teams really able to challenge the top club teams in the world, whereas women teams, I think the best women's team was Jinx, right? And Yaka were the best two European teams.
Jinx, I think, yes.
Was
Jinx and Yaka. That were like top 10-ish, I think. 10th or 12th. Yeah. And like, and there I heard people say like, women and women is like, the women can't compete with the Americans like Mix and Open can. And I think that's something that's going to change now this year. I'm very excited to see that. But anyway, sort of to see this development happen at the top, of course, we already mentioned top teams sort of stacking even more probably is related to that. But I'm wondering, like, how can we use this sort of top down like success sort of that we see to also broaden the grassroots level?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good question. And yeah, one point, I think Seagulls was also really good. I said it before, but I don't know if it was her. Seagulls, Jinx, and Yaka were really good. And like, obviously, Shat was there too.
Jinx was 10th, Seagulls was 11th, okay. And Yaka was 15th.
Okay, perfect. that was quick. Looking up.
You were right.
But yeah, what I wanted to say about the like top teams and what we can kind of like how we can also use that like those elite women's teams that are really like that are really performing and showing us that women's ultimate in Europe is actually also thriving, while at the same time, yeah, there's less and less like high level teams, I guess, or like mid-tier level teams. I think like to really think about it as a pyramid of like, we need this top and we need those role models and we need those really good teams. And to kind of like have a top down perspective of like having those people at the top and also needing them to inspire young athletes, to inspire teams to maybe like have a first team and a second team and to actually push people into new positions and so on to take responsibility. And I think this top-down approach is really important to kind of look like that. We also, it would also be cool to encourage those top players to then do something for their community, to build up teams, to do clinics, to things like that. And then we still also need a bottom-up perspective of like just even like building player bases and stuff, which cannot be done just by having high-level teams. Yeah.
Hmm. When you talk about the top-down approach, I wonder a little bit about the consequences of this high-performing teams. Because especially when you brought up Seagulls, for example, yeah. And again, this is no judgment at all. I know that Ultimate is a hobby still. Should be considered a hobby still, and there's a lot of investment going on after their amazing performance in Cincinnati. I think they have not managed to get back to
for sure
to yeah. the same level. Also, shout out to Vienna and Mantis had a team, a very strong team actually, and after their world's tournament was never the same again. So I think, sorry?
In 2018,
yes, correct. And the I think you see that not only in the women's division, but once again with all these different aspects of consequences and role in society, or how this is brought up. Not sure where I want to get at with this, but I think also when you say we need these role models, and then it would be great if they can do clinics and so on. Like, what is the expectation of these leaders and so on? It's so tough. It's so much work and so much, I don't have a solution for that. And I think maybe it's about this allyship and having more people just, stepping up in order to promote these role models in roles where they can actually focus on themselves and don't need to carry the burden of everyone.
Yeah, actually, Nemo, you're so right. I think it's actually like so wild to see how often like these role models or like these elite players on the elite teams, how much they take on. They coach their teams, they captain their teams, they also sometimes captain or coach their junior national teams. They're in the boards, they're doing so much. We see like a lot of elite players are also very, very active in the community and doing lots. And I think for women's ultimate, what like comes to mind just when you say like, how can we like not put the burden on these main athletes, and you mentioned allyship, I would really, I don't know, like ask everyone to kind of push women's voices and push women's ultimate and not just women and not just the strongest women. I know more and more like men are like paying attention to women's ultimate and so on, but I just still see also a huge gap of like, I think we discussed this in the very first episode with Lifke, of like people just knowing way more men that play ultimate, like in the US and like all over Europe. And yeah, I think that is mainly because everyone kind of watches men's and open ultimate, and then women watch women's ultimate. Not like, this is a very like generalized statement and it's changing, but I think like I would hope that involving more and more people would also make a change there.
Yeah, I think you're touching on a great point. And I think a question that is, again, super relevant to all like diversity and inclusion efforts. Because if people only sort of fight the fight for the causes that affect them personally, we're never going to get anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of burden on a few people. I do think, Annika, we also talked about this last year, for example, when we had our episode with Nas, right? And we talked about experiences of racism, and we noticed that it was like a challenge to sort of address this topic appropriately as two white people hosting this podcast talking about racism. Mm-hmm. And I think the same goes now for us, right? And like for you, Nemo, as well, as a man sort of in a leadership position, making decisions for women's ultimate. So Nemo, what is your perspective on that?
I think we, I'm very glad that the EUF, it's not the first time that this kind of project is put in a center stage, let's say, of the organization. And I think the success of the gender equity manual is still very, very felt in that sense also that it is, we currently have a very diverse group as the board. And yeah, still, when it comes to executing such a project, I think for me, it's about listening and being conscious about my role in this and creating opportunity to have the voices that matter. And as I said before, empower these leaders to be then also and able to give the push in the right direction, but don't need to execute it, right? So this is where we also very much know that from this perspective of we are the federation, the international federation, we cannot go all the way through all these different stages and touch on grassroots sports and make this huge impact, right? So you have these different projects in different nations that have very specific needs and requirements from their governments, from their funding givers, from their sponsors, whatnot. And I think what we want to achieve is to have all of these projects get a better understanding and improve their accessibility and their contribution to women's ultimate, and how this can then be explored and can explode into a bigger base of women's ultimate in Europe in general. And I think one more thought on this note, we have specified project 44, right? We have specified 2030. These are metrics for us in order to generate urgency, but this urgency should never be translated into we need to recruit women, elite women or women's teams into the club season. This is not our goal, right? So this might be one success story that we have 44 teams in the UCF, but we never want to push women's teams into the system if they don't feel ready for it.
Yeah,
I think this is especially since we talked about this burnout factor of competition and the different burdens with rostering rules and 10 games and so on. We don't want to put this strain on more teams. We want to enable a system where more teams are able to compete in that system.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an important differentiation. And we already had a situation with a national federation where they were like, hey, wait, what's up? what's going on here? Don't force us to bring any more teams. And that's not what we want to do.
Yeah, that's a really good clarification. So it's just to kind of like have this number and an ambitious goal, but it's not like the pure focus or like the only goal to have
those
teams. So is there all, just because you said like thinking about like changing the system, so is there like ideas to also change the way the UCS season is made so that we can kind of help women's teams to grow? Or is it more that we just want to spread women's option?
I think it again on the topic of having a constant focus on this development question, we will bring it up again and we will continue to talk about possible changes. I think one important aspect that so far led us to not change it too much is the fact that we just now reached equality in the systems in place.
Yeah.
Right? So we have come from an UCF with 12 women's teams and 24 open team, and now we're at 16, 16, 16, and we have unified rules and we treat it all the same. And this on the one hand feels really good. And we have not yet received enough information or enough input in order to say we have gone steps too far, mm-hmm. or in order to make it more accessible, we need to change XYZ.
Yeah, that really makes sense. I have two other topics that I just wanted to bring up, but I'm happy for Jakob if you have a specific question.
Go ahead.
Listen and stuff. I'm just thinking about juniors again and actually kind of thinking of like the cycle of a women's athlete. I kind of have two things, and like one is to remember that there's a huge difference in like teenage years between men and women competing in sports. That's like a really big factor, and like I see it in Switzerland as well, like in our U14 division, there's so many girls that play and that love playing and stuff. And then if you look at our U20s division, it's way, way less than what it was before.
Yeah.
And there's so many studies that show how many teenage girls stop playing sports, and there's different reasons for that. One, sports is still, especially team sports, is still more like stereotypically male and like set up for men. It's also that like the focus has changed. One big one is periods and not wanting to be exposed. And one of the biggest factors is like being perceived. It sounds really dumb, but like women like not wanting to be judged, to be watched, to be looked at. Like this is not just an ultimate. There's studies about gyms that like where do women train in a gym. And you can actually see that it's where they're least visible, because they don't want to be watched. They don't want someone watching them doing their stuff, because it's often then turns also into uncomfortable situations. And I think that's a really big one that needs to be remembered. Like, how can we make sports safe for teenage girls and women in general? Like, that's a big one. How do we keep these teenage girls in our sport? There's also a factor of teenage girls quitting other sports and coming to us. But I think that's one big factor. And then the other big factor of the cycle of a woman's athlete is often we also lose athletes for maybe a year or two because of having kids. And then how can we build a space for returning mothers? It's kind of looking at this whole life cycle of a woman's athlete, and how can we also keep women in coaching, because there's also fewer women that coach than men.
Yeah.
There's not a question to anyone. It's just more my thoughts, I guess.
Mm-hmm. My first reaction to this would be that the gender equity manual actually touched on a couple of these mm-hmm. topics, right? There was the focus on recruit, train, and retain athletes.
Yeah.
But maybe also with another thought that came when you talked about making the sport safe for women athletes. I think for me, now, especially since in the news and where the current state of the world, it's incredible how much this toxic masculinity is happening. So maybe ultimate can also play a role in having a bringing a space for boys to know what is decency and how this togetherness can actually take shape in sports, and this ultimately obviously results in a safe space for everyone. But having a bubble where you are seen as someone who might struggle and have weird role models, you can also then identify new ones and help in this system.
Hmm.
Maybe that's also an aspect that sometimes gets overlooked. Yes.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I also think that's one of the reasons why we wanted to start this podcast, is because we believe that ultimate as a sport and also the ultimate community can serve as a sort of alternate model of how society or a community can work and function, and how can people can treat each other with respect. And that, of course, has a lot of levels to it. And within that, there's, of course, still inequality and barriers, etc. But that's sort of, I think, what we strive for. I just wanted to touch on what Annika said. You mentioned a lot of factors, especially the dropout quote of young girls. That is also relevant to every sport. Almost every sport mm-hmm. faces the same thing. Of young girls, often sometimes in youth, even more girls doing organized sports than boys, and then at some point that flips around. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also because I feel like our conversation so far has been quite abstract, which of course we're talking about federation work and structural barriers, and that's just quite an abstract topic. But I think this is exactly where we can start thinking about things a bit more concretely, is looking at what organizations, clubs, teams also within Ultimate are doing a good job of doing that, are doing a couple of things sort of that help. And then also, just looking at the different layers, Annika, you mentioned about being seen and being visible. A big part of that is, of course, what is the consequence of being visible and how are you being portrayed, right? So the whole media and coverage part of how women are being talked about when in live streams, in news boards about women's athletes, etc. And then I think another important factor that's also, of course, part of the gender equity manual, but I think something to have in mind is safeguarding. And that safeguarding doesn't just, of course, having a culture of respect and good treatment of each other helps with that, but it's not a fail-safe. And there need to be structural sort of barriers to violence and to misconduct. I think a very, also when you talked about boys, Nemo, I just thought about our conversation that we had after the EUCF party, where we've got multiple reports from women that they felt uncomfortable at that party because of mostly men's behavior at the party, of like taking shirts off, being too close physically, making comments, sexualized comments, etc., to women that were attending the party, and things like that matter, right? Like if I'm an athlete and I want to party, and then the mood gets ruined for me and I have to go home, of course I hope nobody is going to quit Frisbee because of that single experience, but experiences like that matter and they compound, and that's something that women have to face even in our community still.
I think what you just said, Jakob, is a really good like segue into kind of this whole season, because we're going to invite people that are going to talk to us about all of these different things, about the visibility of women in Ultimate, and like visibility of women or in media is not, or female athletes is not a bad thing necessarily, of course. It's just how like being perceived can be very different. But like, that's why we're going to talk about media. We're going to talk about returning after having a kid. We're going to talk to different athletes or experts and coaches and so on, to kind of like tackle all of these specific things that we now, in when talking about this project, we're like so like on a higher level of like talking about things or a higher context, and we actually want to go like into specific topics and specific initiative and specific organizations and stuff, to kind of also inspire maybe our listeners to start new projects, to learn stuff about different numbers of like, yeah, how many women are actually in like sports media or things like that. I think it's important also to educate yourself then to be able to take action.
Yeah, since we have talked so abstract, maybe two elements that we are thinking about introducing and kind of taking a first initiative, first step. One element that I thought was very successful and very well received from the EUGM again, maybe that's something that we can revive, is that we had an open forum for people to create shout outs for their heroes, either coaches, people in federations, or athletes that they want to highlight. And I think back then it was so successful that we were able to fill every week some spots in stories and social media that to create these shout outs. So that's something that we want to look at and start again. And then the second element, I think it's actually an action that happened in Austria, right, Jakob, with Try It Once, Love It Forever. I thought this was a very nice idea of, again, social media recruitment and social media content. But if we as EUF get all federations to choose a month, choose an element where we can actively talk about women's ultimate and how we can introduce ultimate to more women in Europe, then I think that is another great step where we as Europe pull in the same direction. So I think that's also something that we want to start talking about with federations.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Yeah. I think on that note, thank you very much, Nemo, for coming on, for talking about all the issues and complexities around this issue. I think we could go on for quite a while, but of course, we're always happy to get contacted about thoughts, questions that you have about the project or the upcoming season, and so is Nemo. If you have any thoughts, questions, give us a comment or reach out. Welcome to the second season of UVE. We're super excited for what's coming. And Nemo, good luck also for you for the start of the season. And I'll see you around.
Mm-hmm. We'll see each other soon at Spring Tour, Jakob.
Yes, we will. We are on the field, actually.
The first time.
Yeah, indeed. For the first time, not as teammates.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, we can do a little UVE competition.
Let's see.
All right.
All right. Bye.